You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Sci-Fi for Chicks thinks Gotham is no laughing matter in this episode, Send in the Clowns.
Oh, it's very funny. Looks like the bitch got me with a zinger in the end.
Why did you kill your mother, Jerome?
Oh, you know how mothers are. She just kept pushing. And I'm like, fine, Mom. Be a whore. Be a drunken whore even. But don't be a nagging drunken whore. You know? Don't come yell at me to do the dishes if you've been banging a clown the next one! You know.
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. Really, if you guys only knew what we talked about and all the stuff that I edit out. My name is Heather, and I am joined by my podcasting partner in crime, the master of the universe herself, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
You said that's how you wanted to be known,
well,
so I'm
making sure it's known. Yeah, that is my official name. Like, I have paperwork and everything.
Master or mistress? Do you care? Do you like?
Well, I'm gender neutral on the title. Plus, okay. It's Alex, so there are sillies out there who think I'm a guy. I am yet to dissuade them of that notion. I'm waiting for them to catch up, and then I will release the hounds and make fun of them, mock them for eternity. I'm looking forward to that.
Really, again, if you knew what we cut out of these podcasts and say before we even start recording, she has earned her title. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Gotham Season 1, Episode 16, The Blind Fortune Teller. I don't really like their title names. They're just,
Well, they have nothing on our titles. That's for sure.
Nope. I don't know why I latched onto they all have to be song titles. I don't know, but, for some reason, it just works.
Yeah.
Maybe the show makes me want to sing. On a totally different note, but exactly, it's Gotham, but not Gotham. Any of you who saw Walking Dead this week, maybe saw The Talking Dead afterwards, Robin Lord Taylor, our own Penguin, aka also Hippie Sam, he was on. Did you catch that at all, Alex?
I've seen the episode, but I haven't seen Talking Dead. I have it on my to-watch list. But I got distracted by West Wing, so, yeah, for some reason.
Notice how she said she got distracted by West Wing. She didn't say she got distracted by Gotham. it was really fun to see Robin Lord Taylor. He looked like a hipster version of Penguin.
Okay.
But it was Penguin. I mean, his mannerisms, his, how he speaks, everything. It was like, you're like the happy hipster version of Penguin. It is just so funny. And they were talking to him about Hippie Sam, and he was saying how when he got cast in that role and Rick gives him his watch, he went to all of his friends going, Rick gave me his watch. What do you think that means? Am I coming back? What's happening? You know, and then he gets called to come back. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the opening episode of this season of Walking Dead, he comes back for no lines and gets his throat cut. And like people asking, would you come back to Walking Dead? He's like, oh my gosh, yes, in a heartbeat, but I'm dead. So maybe I'll come back as a walker.
Hey.
So we could have Walker, Hippie Sam.
Here's a challenge for all the listeners out there. If there isn't an alternate universe where Penguin is a hipster, I will be very disappointed in you, Internet. Very disappointed.
He was just so cute. He was like the happy version of himself. I mean, because Penguin gets pretty happy. He's very like, I'm cool. I know what I'm doing. But Robin Lord Taylor is just like, oh, I'm so happy. I'm just so happy. And he was just so into it. It was so cute and so different, but exactly the same. Totally different, but exactly the same. It was a lot of fun. And they had two characters from The Walking Dead on there who can't really talk about what's coming, so they kept going to Robin Lord Taylor and asking him what he was saying. Why is it people with three names, you want to say their entire three names every time you mention their name? I can't just say Robin? I have to say Robin Lord Taylor every time.
Because it's three names, so, you know, they matter.
Yeah. And just in case you haven't figured it out by now, I at least am not really thrilled about this particular episode of Gotham, because I have been finding any way to put off getting to talk about it. We spent an hour and a half talking before the show, and I'm trying to figure out what else I had in my head that I could possibly bring up to talk about in this episode. It's not that it was a bad episode, but
it was Alex, I'm fatigued. That's the problem. That's the problem often with not only Gotham, but many TV shows. When they deliver a solid episode, you know, a relatively good one, but that has no remarkable moments in it. There were some good stuff and, you know, important stuff, I suppose, but they didn't leave me, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, what? It just, I didn't connect emotionally with any scene. Well, except for one, but that's for later.
We'll talk about that later.
And in a way, I've kind of felt cheated, because it was a solid episode. But, like I said before, I got distracted by West Wing, because I'm marathoning it for, like,
now this
a gazillionth time, and I know every line already, but it was still more engaging to me than the new, fresh episode of Gotham, so.
That's impressive to know every line of an Aaron Sorkin flick, too. That's impressive. I am by no way also equating this anywhere near Balloon Man. Balloon Man was like,
oh no.
So glad that episode's over. Never watching that one again. But I am really getting fatigued, because we started doing outlines, so we both know where we're going on these podcasts. Yeah. Just so you know, here's a little insight. Because before, it used to be, I'm just going to drive this bus and Alex is alone for the ride. And
we started doing
it worked out sometimes, but not all the time.
Marathon, I think, of Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah,
because we had to.
We needed that help
for 8 hours of recording. You kind of need some help.
Yeah, so we started doing these outlines, and the outline for Sleepy Hollow really recently, and I'm not giving anything away because she hasn't watched it yet. Well, we have Ichabod and Abby, and we have Jenny, and we have Frank, Jenny and Frank, and we have Katrina and Henry. Yeah. And that's it. So there's our outline. That's our outline for tomorrow. I can go ahead and tell you that for the next podcast. Doing the outline for this, we have Bruce, we have Fish, we have Penguin and Zaz and Butch, we have Barbara and the girls, and we have Jim, and we have Lee, and then of course we have the crime, and of course there's so much stuff packed into this. I'm tired. I'm tired before I even get to the episode, and I hate it because there were some really great moments. I'm just tired. I'm kind of like Bruce was when we see him at the very beginning when he's asleep while journaling. Ooh, look at that transition. I wasn't even planning that.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you. I just saw that opportunity and took it. So let's go ahead and get into it. And we did want to talk about Bruce first. So we have Bruce, who has been hard at work here, trying to research things, and Alfred being concerned. Oh, he's so cute with his concern. He's so cute. I just went, oh, Alfred, you're just so sweet. He's doing the parental thing after, was it last week?
He found his parental style. He's sticking to it.
He's got it. I look at David, Mazuz, David, Bruce. He looks older to me. He really does. I think he's gone through a maturity spurt, because he looks like he's definitely taken on this persona more of what he see, where he sees he needs to go, mm-hmm. of being the man of the house, of running this, of doing all of this. I mean, we even have Alfred saluting him, you know, he is the commander now.
He's adorable still. I like him. And I don't like many child actors, because they annoy me.
She doesn't like children.
Yeah. Do not tell my sister or her children that. Because I'm the favorite aunt. But I digress. I don't like children. I don't like child actors. They annoy me. They just don't work often. There aren't many of them who have genuine talent at the age of 10 or 12. Come on. You can't expect every one of them to be Shirley Temple. But this guy is awesome. He was like a little robot child at the beginning of the show. And I could see the reason for it because, you know, trauma, losing parents. I suppose that could...
It's a small thing.
Side note. Somebody said that to me recently. I've seen Bruce Wayne's parents die more times than I've had dinner with my parents. End quote. Which tells you something about how many times we've seen Bruce's parents die on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bigger trauma for him than it is for us. So I get the robot child. But with every single episode that he's been in, he evolves, he changes. The character development on this guy is incredible. Because you see the potential in the actor of growing up to be, you know, Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Or
Michael Keaton.
Yeah, so he's incredible. And even though I still balk at the idea that a 12-year-old, that's how old he is?
Ish, yeah.
As the character, would, you know, research and investigate all those stuff, including, like, company materials that's full of tables and numbers and really boring stuff. I can suspend my belief because he's Bruce Wayne and he's not entirely sane to begin with before he grows up to be Christian Bale or Michael Keaton. But watching him get there, you know, watching him convince Alfred that they should really, you know, go there and talk to those people who will probably try to assassinate him again next episode is incredible.
Well, he didn't even have to convince Alfred. That's what I love. It's like Alfred is like, come on, this is could be dangerous. Alfred, we've discussed this. End of sentence. This is what it is. And it's like, Alfred just forgot. He's like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. This is where it's at. I mean, he did still, I love that in his journal, he has all those doodles
yes.
in the side and things that he's drawn. I still do that, but that's that helps keep the age, but he has this maturity about him. And I love how David is bringing that to Bruce because like you're saying, we're seeing him evolve from this child who lived this very nice sheltered life with his parents and all happy-go-lucky until a really unhappy moment right in front of his eyes. And we've seen him go through all these things and grow. And he realizes now, I think now that he has, after the last episode with Alfred, that he has now that support system that he needs. It wasn't just Alfred the butler is here to take care of me, but he has this connection now with Alfred. Mm. That's not father-son, but it's not father-son. It's this weird mixture that only the two of them have. I think he's got this confidence. I mean, he seems like he's standing up taller and straighter and imposing for this incredibly slight, you know, boy figure, but very imposing. And I love how he sets himself down. And I have two main areas of concern. Underworld involvement in Arkham Project and the chemical weapons manufacturer at Wesleyan Factory. I love how everybody at the boardroom sees Bruce. It's like, oh, here's the cute little kid. He's coming. It's take your kid to work day. And we're just, Bruce, it's so nice to see you here. And the look on their faces when he brings up those two things. Yeah, Alfred better be standing attention back there. Because, like you said, this is not like happy-go-lucky picnic. We're not doing a company picnic now. Everybody on the board is seeing this. And the board still keeps treating him like a kid and him saying, but I haven't told you all I know, and pulls out the legal action. And I love what he says. My youth is not relevant other than if I were a man, I'd be chairing this board. I'm like, oh, he's really grabbing the board by the balls and saying, yeah, I've got my eye on you and you're not getting away with it. And I don't care if I'm in trouble.
That's what I loved about that scene, because all through, the meeting, every single member of the board has this patronizing air yes. to them. They're treating them like it's bringing your kid to work day, and oh, look, Bruce is trying to, I don't know, step into his daddy's shoes and be all businessman-like. Yeah. And isn't he adorable? Why, yes, mm-hmm. he is adorable, but he will also, you know, bring out legal action. And here are all the things that he does know. And it's, I like that he responded to them in a mature kind of way and didn't throw a temper tantrum. After they continued mm-hmm. to treat him with patronizing lines and, you know, oh, you're so cute. Because, yeah, that was... I wonder which one of them will actually, you know... Or, you know, all of them. I'm open to that as well. Which one will
well, be... Well, we had them focusing on the one guy on his left and the woman on his yeah. right. So I have a feeling with them having the lines and being focused on, we're going to see them again.
Probably. That's foreshadowing if I ever saw one. But I like the way he handled himself in that scene. I really did. Mm-hmm. I still have some, you know, doubts about some things and plots that he goes. But then again, I don't like children, so who knows? Maybe 12-year-olds do that all the time. Who knows?
I think he's really taken and learned from everybody yes. that every character that he's dealt with, from Jim and Kat and even the assassin, everybody that he's dealt with this season, he's taken something from and looked at them very, very calculating, very specific. Mm. What do you have that I need? And I think that Kat helped bring that out in him. You know, kid, you're not prepared for any of this stuff. And it did strike a bell with him. And he's like, okay, I need to take what I need from learn these lessons from all these different people and be the man I need to be. And we saw when he dismissed Jim last episode, two episodes ago. Oh, it's all running in together. When he dismissed Jim and when Kat leaves him and he picks back up again, I definitely see this kid on the road to being Batman. And I think this is one of the better successes that our Gotham writers have had. In getting him where I believe, given some more time, this kid could become Batman. Mm,
yeah. Yeah. This was definitely one of those scenes where he's not entirely saying, hey, it's a Bruce Wayne that I know.
Exactly. Speaking of not entirely sane, we have another standalone story with Fish Mooney. We have her she's gotten herself a little bit warmer, so she's now the head. She's in control of everyone there. And then she goes in to rally her troops. What did you think of her? Some of us will get out of here alive and some will die speech, but we're all a family. Go.
Well, I don't even have a rant about it, so I don't know what you mean. Because out of all the scenes, out of all the subplots in this episode, I loved Fish's subplot the most. Because that mm-hmm. is Fish that we met and that we fell in love with. Woman who's in charge of herself and her environment, and she knows what she wants, and she has a plan. And even mm-hmm. though right now she might not know everything she needs to, you know, put the plan in works and be sure that it's going to work, like with Falcone, here she is completely in charge. And at first, probably like it was meant to, I thought it was a slip of a tongue when she said some of us. But then I realized, no, this mm-hmm. is Fish. Everything she does is calculated. Everything she says, every moment she spends anywhere with anyone, she knows how to play them.
And especially after what did happen with Falcone and Penguin and Maroni, she's not going to let herself now be caught unawares. She's not going to be so blind and play just her game. She's looking out for what everybody else's game is. And she might not know exactly what's going on with our mystery people, but she gets it. I love that when she says it's simple economics. Our lives are worth something. some of us are going to get out alive, and we have 57A, who our family beat to death, to show them. We get, our lives are worth something. You're not just taking us. This is my plan. I thought that's really kind of brilliant for her to be able to get to a point where she can rally them. She can make this family. She can have her little meditation class before Fight Club there. I like that, with all of them just kind of sitting around meditating. But get them to a point where this guy doesn't like it, but when he gets called out, he does sacrifice himself for this.
But that's what I thought was incredibly brilliant. In a way that she knew her audience. She knew that those were desperate people, but they were also disillusioned. They saw too much, experienced too much, before she got there. There's no way in hell they would believe her if she promised to get them all out. They would want to believe, you know, in that way that everybody wants to believe the best case scenario is what's going to happen. But they wouldn't, they wouldn't sacrifice themselves in a way the guy did. Because she promised everybody else, everybody would get out. But she promised what she actually might be able to deliver. Some of us are going to get out of here. And that I felt gave them incredible amount of hope, because I could be one of those few who get out. That possibility, it was like, you know, champagne to the head. They got drunk on that hope. And yeah, that guy sacrificed himself. And yeah, everybody else beat him up, you know, killed him basically. To put the plan another step farther. It was brilliant of Fish. And I, watching her orchestrate everything, it was like watching Master at work. Incredible. Yeah.
It was beautiful because, I mean, first off, did they have to kill him? Because he could have just, you know, beat him to a bloody pulp and then just don't move. Because it's not like the guys came and checked, but. That's just a mini thing. I love how she did it. I love that she rallied it. We're a family and we've got to do this. And I think actually my favorite moment of that was at the end, after the guys go, we're going to take your offer up there, that offer of, yeah, I'll go up there to meet boss guy, but you have to stay here. You go take that. And they leave off. And then she goes down there and she actually bends down and does that little kiss on the forehead on 57A. It's like, it was this, she doesn't do things cold and calculating. She's doing them really from a place of controlled emotion. And this was her family. She has this connection to all these people that she doesn't know. She's made herself vulnerable in that way because they're my family. And I care that one of you dies, but we all have to realize not everyone is going to live. Somebody's going to have to die. And that moment, I think, brought another nice dimension to her character. She wasn't just a mobster. She wasn't just a baddie. She had that human side to her as well, but that human side that she goes, that comes out when the job is done.
No, that subplot that Fish has is getting really interesting. I mean, I said before that it has incredible potential, but I'm really thrilled to see that it is, in a way, living up to it. Because I am, of all the things in this episode, not one time, not one second, I was disappointed with it. No, I loved it from the beginning to an end. Everything that happened in the Fish segments, it was...
This was something I think we've been waiting for with Jada Pinkett Smith. Yeah. Is to see this again. Because once we started seeing that she didn't have the upper hand in her own game, not saying the upper hand on everybody else, but once we saw that she was being played without knowing that she was being played, there was something different about the Fish Mooney character. Maybe just the way we were seeing her. It's nice to see it back where I believe everything she says because I know she believes everything and not blindly believes.
Yeah.
She believes because she's thought it out and she knows what she's doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is why I am completely in love with that character. We forgot about it for a while because she was not at the top of her game, so to speak. But this is why. And I'm really looking forward to what they do with her next episode.
Yeah. Well, especially because she has this confidence. That last shot of her just strutting on out with this confidence, you know, she's backlit.
She doesn't know silhouette. What she's going to face. She doesn't know who she's going to face. But there is not an ounce of doubt in her.
Mm-mm. Or fear. I think there's enough fear that she'll stay alive.
Yeah.
Enough fear that she's not, you know, unlike Crane, last episode. See, again, they just all, there's so much going on in these, they just all mashed together. Unlike Dr. Crane, who lost all of his fear and was stupid and got killed, she's got enough where she's not going to get killed. But she is so confident in what she's doing. She knows what she's doing. Her eyes are wide open. Like I said, that walk was just such a great final image because she exuded confidence even in silhouette. It was just incredible. You know, she's going to go off. She's going to find out what these guys want. She's going to formulate the next parts of her plan so that she can get back and with her new family, who she does get out, I think she's going to have a pretty loyal little following there and people that are not going to be any way swayed by Falcone or Maroni. Falcone is not going to be able to sway these people away.
Yeah,
from
because
Fish
if
at
she
all.
Succeeds, those will be the people who she rescued from hell. That's the way they are going to see it. So,
right.
Nothing, no amount of money or threats are going to make them disloyal to Fish. She's going to have her own army of Butch.
Oh, you said the B word.
I know. The moment it left my mouth, it just... Can we take it back?
Okay, well... So we love Fish. We're excited to see Fish. Fish is on a great path. And I don't even care who it is she's about to face, because they're in trouble. Because Fish Mooney is back.
She
100%. Who is not doing so well is our Penguin. I'll start there.
Yes.
I'll ease us into Butch. Is Penguin, who last episode I kind of hypothesized maybe, you know, Maroni or Falcone kept people away specifically to make Penguin feel the heat a bit more. Well, first off, Penguin needs to get a new booking artist because Mama is not such a great crowd draw for entertainment.
He is failing miserably
at the club business.
He's just not good at it.
No. And he has that temper because, you know, when the one guy boos his mom, oops, it doesn't do so well when you kill your customers there, no matter how bad they are. You know, you have three customers, so why are you killing 30% of your clients?
Yeah, it's just... I was sitting there watching the club scene with her, with his mom and him, and just like... Penguin, darling, this is not how you earn your thee to link to our previous podcasts. This is not how you succeed in business. I have no idea how you run a club, but I know for sure this is not it.
No. You know, and I know that the color is his color, you know, the blues, the blacks, the whole thing. That's definitely Penguin's color. But looking at the set, I think it's interesting that when it was that vibrant red and gold, even when it was a little bit dingy, but that red and gold of Fish, it was this vibrant club and people wanted to be there. And now it's blue and cold and empty. And it's this visual cue that you see as well. That I think is that insight into Fish is going to be drawing people into her because even though she is this crime boss, she still has something there. She's able to rally these people that she has no connection with other than we're all stuck in hell together.
Yeah.
waiting for them to take her body parts. She's able to rally them into a family. Penguin has this club. He has the backing of Falcone. He has all the stuff going for him, and nobody is there. And you can tell the people that are there are just like, I don't want to be here. I got to. Okay, I'll applaud.
Yeah, it's just, it's sad.
Penguin. Yeah, and it is sad because I love Robin Lord Taylor. Again, using all
and
three names.
You'd think that a guy who were able to plot those schemes and double cross and be a double agent would think about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But no. And it's like, oh, Penguin, we're not even talking about one step forward, two steps back. You're currently doing a moonwalk. Back.
Yeah. It's
regressing completely.
It's funny too, because on Talking Dead, Chris Hardwick, when he introduced him, said, and Robin Lord Taylor, who's killing it as Penguin on Gotham.
Oh, he's
and
killing it. It's going, just not in a good way.
Well, the writers are killing it because he's ready to give so much more. And they're not giving him what he needs to be the Penguin. I don't even call him Penguin. It's Pengy.
No.
Because it's just, you're cute. You're cute.
A little psychopathic puppy, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's sad, I think, because I see it. I keep seeing it, that potential there, and waiting for it to break out. But again, we have this underlying fear. He is constantly scared. Here's the puppy part where he's been so used to getting beaten that anytime anybody raises their hand, he cowers. Because the minute we have, okay, here it comes, Alex. The minute we have Victor Zsasz come in, you see this instant fear wash over Penguin and everything. And I'm like, oh, come on. If you want to be the Penguin, you've got to have a little bit more confidence and stop being so scared of every little thing. You know, and he says, Falcone's not happy with your club numbers and needs something to do it. And he's, Mr. Zsasz. It's just so wimpy. That's why I'll call him Wimpy. He's more like Wimpy from the Popeye shows than he is Penguin. And this is not Robin's fault at all. I blame this 100% on the writers. However great they're doing with Bruce, I think they're really failing Penguin. Miserably, just horribly failing him. To have him constantly being so either scared or maniacally happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he sees...
No, wait for it.
Butch
before you go, okay. Because I want to get this out, and after you say what you're going to say, I'm not going to be able to, because I'll get distracted. Okay. You know how they say, you fake it till you make it? And they usually say it in the fictional world of TV shows. To characters that end up faking it well enough to succeed. Well, Penguin is currently faking it until he makes it, and utterly, completely failing at it.
Mm-hmm.
He tries, he's faking it, but he doesn't fake it completely. Because if he faked it well, he would remain calm when Victor Zsasz showed up. Because, I understand why he was scared, because Victor Zsasz is a psychopathic, scary dude who kills and tortures.
Yeah, I don't even want to meet that actor on the street, because, you know, with his eyebrows shaved, he looks really...
Yeah.
Scary.
So, that is not a person who I want to be in the same city in, let alone the same room. So I get why he was scared. But if you're faking it until you make it, you have to fake it all the time. It's literally the saying, fake it until you make it. If you still didn't make, you know, if you aren't there, you keep faking it. And he's just, and a puppy.
Well, and this is where he needs to do, you know, WWFD. What would Fish do? What would Fish do in this situation? If she was in the same thing where she's not bringing in the money. It's like, learn from your mentors. Bruce is learning from his successes and failures and other people's things. You need to, too. What would Fish do if she was in this club and it was failing the way yours is and Victor Zsasz walked in? She wouldn't go, Mr. Zsasz, Mr. Zsasz, I'm so sorry. You know, she wouldn't be doing that. She would, like you were saying, she would put on this extra air of confidence, and I got this, and
she would offer Mr. Zsasz a drink, at least. You know? Exactly. To buy time, or something.
Pengi is becoming very sniveling, and it's not Robin's fault. It's not his fault. It's the writers. Writers, do something better with him. And while you're doing something better with him, be nice to our Butch.
Yes. I wrote on Twitter that Penguin does not know how to treat Butch. He doesn't deserve a Butch because he doesn't know what to do with a Butch. And
Butch is a handful, and I mean that in a good way.
And they took Butch, and they took him, and they broke him. And I do not enjoy this. I do not like it. He looks relatively undamaged, but this is not what I meant.
I have to say, I was a little spoiled for this, and not in a major way. It was just a tweet that I had back and forth with somebody, and we were talking about at the Drew Powell. That's Butch Drew Powell's Twitter feed, and I'm happy to promote that because he always favorites and retweets and replies to us. So I'm happy to promote him because we do love Butch. And they said, "Yeah, I can't wait to see him in next week's episode." And I was like, "Oh, I kind of didn't want to know that I was waiting to see Butch." You know, it was still kind of. Mm. When is he coming back? What happened to Butch? What's he going? So I knew he was coming back. When Zsasz brings him in and he's just standing there, I had that moment of, wait, what's going on? And then when he says that he's worked on Butch for several weeks. Okay, so we know it's been several weeks. But you know what I flashed to when he was talking about that? I flashed into a different geek genre there, a little Game of Thrones with Reek. You know, Theon Greyjoy is now, he's not Theon anymore, he's Reek. Because when he says, "Hey Butch, dance for me," and then he starts doing a little dance, I'm like, oh my gosh, they've broken Butch. What did they do? You've broken my Butch. It's just not right.
It was, and I didn't have any spoilers about that. So when I saw Butch, it was, my first reaction was, oh my god, Butch is back, and he looks relatively undamaged and alive. But then my heart, like, went completely stopped because it was, oh no, Butch is standing there. That is not good at all. That is terrible.
And he's standing there because of Victor Zsasz, who is a Falcone person.
That is not good at all. That is terrible. And I feel like I'm about to have a very bad, terrible, horrible day. And it's just like, no.
Yes, Alexander.
No.
Wait, that was a wrong episode there. I am interested to see what they're going to do with that. I'm interested to see how it's going to affect Fish when she comes back.
That is something I'm looking forward to. To see them. I want to see the way Butch is going. What is he going to do? And whether or not, in my little fangirl heart, I hope that he's able to overcome the brainwashing because he loves Fish more than he's terrified of pain or something. I don't know. I can't see Butch going against Fish because he's Butch and I love him. And my heart is only just becoming, you know, a real heart full of feelings. And I'm not ready to give them up just yet. It's just Butch. Heather, tell me everything's going to be all right.
Having a feeling, seeing Butch come back like this, and seeing what Fish is going through, that we're going to be keeping Fish away still for a while longer.
Good.
Because I don't think she needs time to really build it up. Build up her family, her army, her group, whatever, and make a grand entrance. I don't want her slinking back into Gotham.
No, she needs
I want
have...
her to make a nice grand entrance back in it. And I think if they do that, if they do her character justice and really have her, when she does come back in grand style, you're going to have then some kind of confrontation between Fish and Butch, where Fish sees what has happened to Butch. And I really think I'm going Game of Thrones here. And, you know, when they played, you know, they sent Theon in, you know, to back into some of his old haunts. And it's like, can you trust him? Can you trust him? I'm like, yep. I got him, and he didn't turn back to Theon. He stayed Reek. I have a feeling that Butch is not turning back anytime soon. This is Gotham. I think eventually, yes, he will.
Good girl.
But I don't think anytime soon. Alex doesn't like me
right
now. I am
okay with eventually. As long as it's not at all. So, yeah. I'm okay with waiting. As long as things go my way. I'm just saying.
Now you know, people know what I have to go through on all of these. I'm just hoping though that him making the turn back isn't a turn back right before.
Oh yeah, that's not going
really
to
bad happens.
No. If that happens, we riot.
I can't even believe I had the balls to bring that up, even though you're 7 hours in the future. Got a little scared even bringing that up. Well, Butch, we are glad that you are back. We are just sad to see you in Zaz's hands.
Yes.
We still love you at the Drupal.
We do. We love him. We love him the most. It's basically. I am not going to lie. I love him the most.
Somebody that is also back that I don't know if I really care. And I hate saying that because I liked where she was going originally. And this just kind of bothered me is we have Barbara Babs stumbles drunk back into her apartment, stumbles across Cat and Ivy, and I like how she just joins in the slumber party. No big deal. There's two stray street kids in my fancy schmancy apartment eating my Cocoa Puffs or Count Chocula or whatever it was that she was eating and just sits down. Whatever. What did you think about the return of Babs?
How should I say it? I've already been mean about things.
PG-13.
So I should probably
That's
be
That's how you should
nice,
say it, PG-13.
I don't think I can.
Yeah.
Those scenes, Barbara scenes, they made no sense to me. Seriously.
No.
They made no sense. It's like now, you know, in retrospect, that scene with her moving back to her parents made no sense because apparently it didn't go anywhere.
And it makes even less sense now.
Yeah, and now she's really? Coming back, and instead of calling the police, you know, 911 or something, because there are two street kids in my fancy schmancy apartment. Hello. And after she sobers up, the kids are still there. Hello. Call.
And giving her fashion advice.
Yes!
That just makes you look slutty. Dress like you're not trying.
I did not understand why the writers felt the need to put those scenes in there. Like, didn't she break up with Jim? On her own?
Well, she did, but you know she doesn't really mean it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, there's what, three scenes with Barbara in this episode?
Yeah.
Let's just talk about the first two. Because the third one, I have different feelings on the third one. But these first two in her apartment with the girls, why? Why?
They were so pointless.
Why do we need this?
They were, the only reason why they were there was to get Cat and Ivy in, I feel.
And Barbara. Hey, we haven't seen Barbara, Cat, and Ivy in a while. What can we do? Hey, let's all have a slumber party at Barbara's apartment that she hasn't been to in months. And everybody can eat Cocoa Puffs and do each other's hair.
It's like...
What?
What is this? What is this? Why?
I actually think that Barbara coming back in this episode could have worked if they had cut out those first two scenes. You don't even need those scenes with Cat and Ivy. If we just went to that third scene where she walks into the police station and we don't even need that backstory of, you know, she was dressing slutty or anything like that. If she just walked in looking Barbara again and saw Jim and Lee kissing and left, that would have been a great way for her to come in, make that mini appearance, get something across.
Yeah.
Make her be there for a reason. But with those first two scenes, it killed the impact of what that scene could have been for me. Of her seeing Jim moving on. She moved on, but she doesn't think Jim has. Just seeing Jim moving on, I think would have been a great solo scene impact for her in this episode.
Yeah. I think Anyway, I hate Barbara's scenes in this, mostly because what could have been her story of recovery, again, because apparently she kicked the habit before, what could have been a story about her struggle with, you know, pills and booze and whatever she got addicted to, got turned around, and we spent two pointless scenes that had three female characters in them who weren't the focus of those scenes.
Yeah.
It's like, I get that Jim Gordon is the main character among the main characters, basically.
Right.
But to have him be the focus of scenes he's not even in, it emphasized the fact that the writers really don't know what to do with Barbara.
No. And I will say, from what you just said, those two scenes made me, quote unquote, like the scene where Barbara goes back to her parents more, because that was about Barbara and her past and her parents, yeah. At least. That was at least something about Barbara that we learned. Yeah. All we learned in those other two scenes is she's now mooning over Jim. And I'm not saying a female character can never moon over a male character that she's lost, or a female character that she's lost, or that a male character can't do the same thing, or da da da. But for her to have such an absence and come back to this, to be just so willing to accept two stray kids in her apartment, just because Kat has knowledge about Jim. Oh, he left his keys like a week ago or whatever, and we just thought we'd hang out. Okay, give me the cereal. Let's talk. And then obviously they had girl talk about Jim, because next scene we see all this fashion advice. It made her character so much less. So much less.
Yeah, it's like within, what was it, 6 minutes of screen time, the writers managed to, I don't know how to say it the nice way, but they managed to completely strip her of any characteristics and personality traits that she had prior to her reappearance. It's like, we saw Barbara, who had battled addiction and who had complex relationship with not only Jim, but with Renee and everything. And what we got back, and she left and went back to live with her parents. And what we got back was a cardboard copy that looks like Barbara, but isn't. And it's like,
yeah.
Why am I watching this? What is this?
I mean, I know in like the span of the season, 14 episodes is a long time, 13, 14 episodes, yeah. But the second episode of the season is when she was this strong, confident woman, and she went and turned in, you know, gave this information to help save these street kids. Okay, so maybe she has a tie to street kids to that. But for her to be so strong, morally strong and mentally tough and confident in herself there, to see her the way she is now is so disappointing. And it just, it's like she has nothing if she doesn't have Jim or Renee. And Renee can't be around her because we know that that'll just drag Renee back down. And yay Renee for standing up for herself and saying, I can't be there. I can't do that. This is a Days of Wine and Roses kind of a thing. Ooh, major flashback there. Good movie, people. Go check it out. But she said she can't. And so it's like she's falling back on Jim to be my savior. But Jim's the one that you left because you didn't feel safe. It just doesn't make sense. This is like, she's becoming like the Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
Of this series. Yes, cut her stuff out. And I bet the series will be a lot better. And I hate saying that because I loved where she was going and I really like this actress. But she's just being given crap. She's making Penguin's storyline look like Oscar-winning story.
Yeah.
And we know how we feel about Penguin. Yeah, if you don't know, rewind a little bit here. Let's go back and watch this episode again and just skip those first two episodes and just have it where she comes in and sees him kissing Lee yeah. and see if that makes it any better. So let's get into Jim and Lee. She's more uncomfortable, Barbara is, but I think Jim's getting over his discomfort about things like public displays of affection and getting cozy.
Lee is training
getting cozy at the circus.
Well, Lee is training him well. Like, soon he will be almost housebroken. I am impressed with the way she's handling him. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. But before we talk about Jim and his newly acquired game, can I say something about the flying Graysons that we've seen this episode?
Well, since they do come in pretty much right when we see Jim and Lee getting cozy, go right ahead.
Yeah, because that is the result of the casting news and rumors that we've talked about months ago, about how we will get a little origin story of, you know, Robin in a way that we saw his parents get together. And it was this entire Romeo and Juliet kind of storyline. And they only got together.
Screwball comedy, yeah.
And they only got together Hatfields and McCoys. Jim Gordon had a speech, which, by the way, wasn't very good, or, you know.
Wasn't that good of a speech.
It wasn't, ooh, let's fight for freedom and, you know, fight murder.
Some of us will make it out alive. Yeah. Yes, I said some. Fish had the good speech. Yeah, he didn't have the good speech.
Jim really didn't have an impressive speech, and to think that that speech got those two warring families together, it's just like, yeah, I can suspend my disbelief, but not that much. Not that much. So that was one thing. And then one line that made me giggle like a crazy person. When Daddy Grayson, let's call him that, said that they're going to name their son Gordon. And Mrs. Grayson said,
Jim, yeah.
No. And I was like, yeah, no, they said Gordon.
I thought they said Jim.
No, they said Gordon. Okay.
Whichever.
Which is what made me think, well, you say Gordon isn't a good name. Well, hate to break it to you, but Dick isn't a good name either.
Richard. Richard Grayson. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just saying.
I'm gonna have a little bit more a rant on that when we get into our crime thing that kind of relates. And I will save that rant for together. Mm-hmm. For an episode we don't like, but I think it is because we digressed a lot trying to not talk about this episode. We're gonna go a little bit longer here, people.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm gonna get over into the happier side. I wanna get back to Jim and Lee. Because where you kind of took us started taking me down my rant, and maybe I'll end with a rant.
Okay.
That I've learned from you. I like how they're playing together. I still am hopeful for an eventual Alfred and Lee thing, because I think that would be great. But I love that she stands up to him, that she's having fun, she's giggly and happy and beautiful, and yet she has the ideas. She's calling him on things. When we have the blind fortune teller, oh, look, there's the title of the episode, give them that little clue there. The servant of the devil lies in the garden of the Iron Sisters. She's the one that says you're very arrogant in your certainty. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love seeing her call him on that. Because, yeah, it's like, I get you're a cop, and, you know, oh, we don't want the psychics and things in there. But she's right. It's like, what if this does help you? What if it gives you something? And the way he is so arrogant about it. And then even later, when they're walking through the park, when they kind of figure out what some of the stuff is, and, you know, when they're walking through the dark there, and she's like, yeah, you want a strong woman, but when it comes down to it, you just want me to stay home and bake cookies.
Well, not cookies.
I like that he broke the tension by saying pie. I'd like pie better. So at least he's trying to break the tension, but she's calling him on this. So, Morena, you are being everything that Barbara was supposed to be.
Yes, exactly.
That's what Barbara was in the beginning. She was the one that was calling Jim on his crap. This is something we should be turning this. You need to have this tip. We need to get this out there. We need to save these kids. That's what Barbara was in the beginning. And Barbara is so lacking now that it's like they're having to put all of that on Lee.
Yeah.
And Morena, I think, is doing a great job at getting it, at doing this and carrying that and calling them on these things. And, you know, still, she's doing that separation thing too, where it's like, I like you. I still really like you. But you know something? You're really pissing me off. I still like you, but you're pissing me off. You're pissing me off, but I still like you. You know, she's doing really well at balancing that because we can be that way. We can definitely have those two sides that go on at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that it even personifies when they were talking about the murder and seeing the murder. She said it was ugly, but also kind of thrilling and scary. Thanks for letting me be there. She's like, I get that. Ooh, I don't like that, but ooh, I'm kind of intrigued. And she's got a good duality going to her, good balance in her personality.
Yeah. Plus, I really enjoyed the dinner when she, you know, realized what the clue was. It was like, I know what the clue is. And it was like, and Jim was, yeah, let's go tomorrow morning. But I know what the clue is. You mean, like, right now?
But the pot roast is so good. Yes, I want to eat the pot roast.
This was brilliant. And I feel it showed off the way their relationship is really well. Because they have fun together. But she has, like, Jim is trying to tell her no. And fails miserably. And that's been in my experience that those are the best relationships. When just like, it works. And it's not flawlessly. It doesn't work flawlessly. And it doesn't work effortlessly, like some relationships are portrayed. But it's like, they want to be together. In a way that they like each other enough to try and work through it. Like, okay, let's go look for the murder weapon in the middle of the night, because of course it's a good idea.
Yeah, that's it. Let's walk through a park under a bridge in a really dangerous part of town. Just the two of us. I'm like, come on. And something that I think is a smart way that they wrote this is that she gets upset because he sends her home, and he's upset because they were on a nice date, and also because he was hoping for a little extra dessert there. She says, you're right, to him, and he also says that she was right, that she was right about the hypocrisy. So they're both seeing each other's side. They're both giving each other that credence. It's not just, oh, you're the man, so I'm going to bow down to you. And it's not like, oh, you're the woman, I'm just going to placate you. I'm going to patronize you and just let you think what you believe. Yes, dear. Yes, dear.
I was hesitant when they introduced her, but I'm buying into it more and more.
Yeah. I am, and like I said, I don't like that because I really, ever since I stumbled across that, I really want her to get with Alfred, but I'm liking the two of them quite a bit. And he's obviously liking it nicely because we had very few Harvey moments in this episode, but my favorite one was at the end with a, why so happy? You slept somewhere without razors and smell like lady soap. Easy catch. I love Harvey.
And just, but it's such a guy conversation to have.
It is.
It's like, you got laid. Like, oh, Harvey, my precious, precious Harvey, don't you change? Well, you can change, but not much.
He can grow, just don't change.
Yes.
That's the difference. So, yeah, I am begrudgingly liking their relationship and what it's kind of bringing to them and what she's bringing out of Jim, making him a little more playful. And a little more at ease with himself. I do like that. Something I don't like.
And go.
Okay. So here's the rant. So It was several months ago that you broke the news about Dick Grayson being shown, you know, getting his origin story in utero. And so we knew that was coming at some point. And as soon as it's Circus and the Flying Graysons, it's like, okay, here we go again. And we're at a circus. And of course, the ads were promoting that we were going to meet the Joker. We were going to get the origin story of the Joker. They need to stop telling us things. If you're going to people Gotham with so many characters, which I think there's only like 5 or 6 people in all of Gotham when the series started, mm-hmm. and they just keep shipping people in every episode. We now have easily over 1,000. It's just, there's characters everywhere that keep getting introduced. If you're going to do this, stop telling us we're going to get the origin story of Dick Grayson. That would have been like a cool moment, because it's like, oh, it's the Flying Graysons. Is Dick in there? Are we going to see like a little baby Grayson in there? Because we know he's younger than Bruce, so he has to be less than 12 years old. So it's like, are we going to see it? And then at the end, when you saw them get together, it would have been like, oh, he's not even born yet. Whereas this entire episode, I'm like, yeah, okay, you two, this whole tension between the two of you.
Yeah, that's not obvious at all.
You're
going to
get together, and you're going to get pregnant, and that's going to be this, and we're going to have some sort of story about it, blah, blah, blah. And we saw in the previews the whole thing about Joker. We knew Joker was coming, but you even see the thing in the promo, which a lot of times I don't watch the promotions, mainly because we're watching them early or whatever. I wish I hadn't seen this. Back in the Lost days, haha, I got it in again. There was a lot of fans that wouldn't watch the next time on Lost because they were like, you're giving away too much. Mm. Even if it was nothing, even if it was clips, they would want to study it, and they would, you know, they'd say, you're giving away too much. You have movie trailers that people go see the movie and say, you put all the good parts in the trailer. You gave away everything. There is no surprise. There was not one single surprise in this episode for me. Yeah. Not one. Because I knew that Joker was going to come out. I knew he was going to do this. And I'm watching this actor do this. And as soon as we see Jerome, you're like, okay, well, that's Joker. And look how mild-mannered and meek he is, and how much I love my mother, and blah, 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 blah. You know, yeah, mother is perfect. She's had lovers, but, you know, no boyfriends. And, you know, I was fine with it because sex is a healthy human activity. He was playing it so good. And if you hadn't known that Joker was coming, it would have been, when I saw him, I would have been like, is that Joker? And you would have been still guessing until that moment, which he played it so beautifully, and it was killed by spoiling, by being too many people in the story, too many villains, too many population. When he lifted his head and went into this whole psycho thing, when you saw Joker come out, he did an awesome job with that. Awesome job acting it. And as soon as it was over, I'm like, still too many people in Gotham. I wish I hadn't known he was coming, and I wish they hadn't introduced him yet. What are they doing? And it's like, you killed this incredible opportunity to introduce the most iconic Batman villain of all. I mean, and he did, I can see him holding his own. I loved Cesar Romero in the original. He had this great comic touch to it. I loved Jack Nicholson. Brought this really sinister, malevolent kind of attitude to it. I mean, I still love that. Did you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? Yeah. No idea what it means, really, but it makes that impression. It makes you kind of get all chills. Heath Ledger so deserved his Oscar for Joker. This is a role that I do not know has been done badly. And you lost the momentum on this by crowding him in with all these other criminals and characters in there, by teasing him so that we knew he was coming. I was very disappointed, especially when he did such a good job. The actor killed it.
But
I'm pissed.
Tried to watch it like I didn't know, but I couldn't. And the moment he showed up, I was like, oh yeah, I don't know what the crime is going to be, but he did it. Yeah, then exactly. The victim turned out to be his mother. And the way he played it, like he said, it was, if I didn't know, I would say it was refreshing. You know, that character and that approach to it's a healthy human thing to do. And of course she had many lovers, but, you know, like, okay, that's a new approach. I would be intrigued. Like, I would probably be a little ticked off, like there's something wrong with him. But hey, maybe he was like Loki, you know? There's something wrong with him, but I love him anyway. And knowing he was what they were building up to, when the reveal finally came, instead of being awed and impressed with his acting, because the guy is incredible. I've seen him on Shameless, and I've seen him in a couple guest star spots. The actor...
Cameron Monaghan, by the way.
He is incredible. He has incredible range. And yet I was left unimpressed. What was supposed to be the plot twist of all plot twists and the reveal of a psychopath. I was like, yeah, okay, so been there, done that. What's next?
Check. We got another one. It's like, I just need the checklist of all the, I'm gonna go to Wikipedia and give me all the villains and let me just start putting check marks by them. Everybody that they've introduced and all the other characters. Check, check. We got them. Somebody tweeted, I think, Gotham Addict and a couple other, I apologize for not knowing all of them there, but it tweeted, you know, like, are you guys ready for Joker? And I tweeted back, no, because Gotham's getting way too crowded. Do you know how many retweets and favorites I got on that? I'm like, I'm not alone, Gotham writers. Stop shoving everybody down your throat. This, having Joker being revealed should have been that mid-season finale or a finale moment or something. It should be big. It should be huge.
Yeah. And what do you bet he's not coming back? You do not introduce Joker and then do nothing. Next episode. I don't even know. But I don't know what's going to happen in the next episode. But I'm fairly sure that this was the first and the last moment we've seen Joker this season.
You know, I'm sure we'll see him again, but yeah, I don't know if we see him this season, I just don't understand what they could be doing, because it's...
You do not introduce...
Such a packed season.
You do not introduce Joker and not have multiple episode story arc. That is...
Yeah, and here they have this multiple episode story arc with, you know, Dr. Crane that wasn't a multi-episode story arc that was just, this two-parter, they're really failing for me in this introduction.
Yeah. It's just... No, this is not how you deal with those characters. And I'm just... once again, this is more both on the writers and the marketing team at Fox. You do not advertise it like, oh my god, look at what Batman villain we have coming next. Because this is not about Batman.
It's almost like you don't have faith in what your material is, that you have to keep relying on these shiny things. Oh, look at the shiny object over here.
Yeah.
See, keep coming back. Keep coming back because we have all these shiny objects. And I hate this because we do actually like this show, but I'm going to be very honest. We purposefully record this show before we record Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
Because this one is disappointing us more and more.
And this is something we record because, well, we started it. So we should probably do it.
I mean, this kid, I hate this because looking at this kid, again, Cameron Monaghan, looking at him, looking what he's done, look, even like his headshot picture, he's got such incredible potential. Incredible potential. It is showing on IMDb that he should be in next week's episode as well.
Huh.
He's credited for next week's episode.
Oh, joy.
I just don't understand why you introduce the Joker in the mix of everything. Not that it wasn't a bad episode. This was not Balloon Man. But why do you introduce Joker in the mix. We've just gotten Scarecrow, and we're Enigma's coming up more, and we've just gotten this character and this character and this character. And next week we have the episode Red Hood. We have all these characters just being mashed. Why do you do that to Joker?
Yeah, it just, let's move on.
Because he did a great psychotic turn. Right after this, I watched, Castle. Again, jumping genres, but it's Nathan Fillion, and it's a fun show. And he was talking about the 3XK killer, who is the serial killer and has been plaguing them forever, and very ominous and very, you know, can look like to everybody else, this happy-go-lucky guy, but then he just gives this look to Castle or Beckett. And it's like, chills go up your spine. I can see that from this actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not what I walked away with. I walked away with, gosh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of there being so many people that I now have to keep track of. I get that you guys are also playing to the DC people who know this whole universe and are just relishing, salivating, oh, we're getting another one. There are those of us who love the story, but aren't counting the minutes until every single character comes into the show.
Here's my problem, one of many, with this. You know how...
By the way, we did a lot of ranting before we even started recording, so we are in a ranting mood, so apologies.
But you
we're
know
in prime
how,
ranting mood. Go ahead.
Sophomore? No, wait. I don't know how American schooling system works.
Freshman.
Yeah, but
we're in
second
freshman
year.
This year for them.
Second year, that's sophomore, right? It's freshman.
Second year sophomore, yes.
Freshman, mm-hmm. Sophomore, junior, senior, yeah.
Right.
God. This is my entire knowledge of American education is from TV shows, so you have to forgive me. But you know how sophomore shows often experience a slump?
Mm-hmm. Sophomore slump, yeah.
In a creative department, in viewers, in everything. It's basically really hard to beat, and not many shows manage to actually do well second season. I cannot imagine. My brain just refuses to provide me with a picture of what sophomore slump is going to look like on Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot compute. It's scary. It's terrifying. And if I think about it too often, I'm going to have nightmares. Because season one is weak. Season one is one wasted potential after another plot holes, logical...
With some shining, gleaming, wonderful moments, but not enough of them.
Flat,
they're islands.
2D,
they're islands in the ocean.
Two-dimensional characters, not much. It just, I cannot imagine how they can slump from this. And they will if don't change something in their writing's room.
What I would prefer is if you're going to do this, try not to make them two-dimensional purposefully. And make them like this is the cartoon character. Make this the comic book character. Mm. And then show me those glimpses that you're going to make them bigger and better and bolder and three-dimensional, that you're going to pull them out of the page. Right now, I feel so like we keep getting glimpses of how wonderful these characters are, and then they go back to two dimensions again.
Mm.
I don't like that. It's like, let them grow, like how Bruce is growing, how Kat grew. Look at some of the characters you do have that are doing these wonderful organic growing, that are going from two-dimensional to fully realized characters. And stop giving us bits and pieces and back and forth and such. It's very disappointing. But I liked the episode. An hour plus into ranting about it. I liked the episode. I'm going to end it there now just so that we don't keep ranting on and people listen to another 10 minutes of us ranting about this. It was a good episode, but it's just getting very tedious, I think, for Gotham. So I'm hoping next week, episode 17, which is Red Hood, that we'll get a little bit of a break. Not. We will have some more Bullock, because it says Gordon and Bullock uncover the Red Hood gang. Following several bank robberies, Gordon and Bullock investigate the Red Hood gang. We are going to see Selina Kyle continuing to bond with Barbara. And Fish Mooney tries to reclaim her position in the underworld.
Yes.
So that's what we have in store. I am going to go ahead and tell you, I will probably not be watching it that night because that is my birthday. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And I don't want to be disappointed on my birthday. Aww. I will be busy waiting for the Sleepy Hollow season finale. Much explosions and happiness in that one, I'm sure. We will be back next week to talk about Red Hood, and hopefully we'll be a little happier and a little less ranty. Mm. I don't know. Is it possible? If you want to continue to hear us, you know, say rant on things that we love so much, please make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Sci-Fi for Chicks. Of course, we're over on Twitter too, at Sci-Fi for Chicks, and you can email us, sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi for me.com. I'm seeing the Sci-Fi for Chicks kind of repetitive theme there. Got a lot of those. You can also call us on our hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. We would love to hear what you thought of this episode. Do you agree with any of our rants? Do you think we're crazy? You're wrong if you do. No, I'm just kidding. We would really love to hear what you think. Make sure to also go over and check out another Sci-Fi for Me podcast called Rogues Gallery, which is all about DC. I'm sure they'll have a lot to say on that one. And Jason does write the recaps for Gotham. Think he's gonna agree with us, or is he, since he's a big DC universe kind of a guy,
he's a guy,
is he gonna like this episode?
So probably not. Men are often wrong and need to be set in their ways, much like Jim.
Well, we need a little bit more analytical thinking there. We need some more Bruces to figure out some things. Maybe Bruce would plan out things.
Maybe Bruce
a
can fix
bit
Barbara.
Yeah, more Bruce, less Barbara. Oh, I'm sorry, Barbara. I love you, but I'm not liking you very much.
Well, Bruce
right
needs
now.
To fix Butch.
We will be back. We will be back next time. Oh, and if you would like to support our endeavors, please go over to sci-fi4me.com. There is a donate button there, just in case you want to help us continue this, because Alex and I are doing Gotham. We're also doing Sleepy Hollow. We're thinking about iZombie. Mm-hmm. We will be back with Orphan Black when that comes back in April. There's other ones we're looking at, other Sci-Fi for Chicks podcasts. We've got all sorts of podcasts going over on sci-fi4me.com, some TV shows, including a pilot that I'm working on, Cosplay Police, for any of you cosplayers out there. It's a pilot episode. If we like it, we might pick it up, but that's going to be up to you guys. So if you'd like to support us, there are so many ways. Definitely share us and like us, and you know. Thank you so much, Alex. I will talk to you tomorrow, actually.
Ciao.
Ciao. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.